All right, welcome listeners to a brand new episode of Oh My Word. Bonus episode we've got today with someone. Wait for the big build because this is someone we've been waiting a while to speak to. We've heard his name come up before. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of all ages, I present to you Ernesto Cisneros. Welcome so much to our program.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. That was quite the intro.
Well, you know, when we're excited for someone, we really got to build it up. So let's get into things. Ernesto, first of all, if you don't know who he is yet, you must not be paying attention to the book world because his debut, Ephraim Divided, just came out. But we're going to talk about how he got there because it doesn't, just because that's his first book to come out, doesn't mean that's the first book that ever happened. So we'll start, let's just start from the beginning. Ernesto, how did you decide, okay, writing is going to be a thing? Like, I'm actually going to try to write a novel. Like, how did you even get to that point?
Well, it's kind of strange because I never really thought that it was something I could really do.
Oh.
But for some reason, I always just kind of had the bug. Growing up, I was always that one kid who just stared out the window. And I was pretty much just a terrible daydreamer, or actually, I was a gifted daydreamer.
Right.
I never really liked that side of me. I just wish I wasn't so distracted all half the time. And that followed me most of my life. And then when I got to high school, there was a little scholarship, a writing competition. And I think it was like $1,500 for the first place. And so I wrote a short story. And that was pretty much the end of that. I had left it aside, and it wasn't until I started teaching again that I kept telling the students, trying to encourage them to write. But as a teacher, I don't think you can ever tell kids to do something you're not willing to do yourself.
Right.
And so I started writing again, and I would write little short stories for the kids and read them to them. And the kids were actually encouraging me. They're like, wow, these are really good. You should publish these. And so I was kind of thinking about it. I'm like, okay, let me go back. So the first book that I wrote was actually based on that short story from high school.
Oh, wow.
I found a copy of it, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is horrible. But it had some very interesting points, and there were some things that I liked about it. So I figured, you know what, I'm going to give this one a try. But I think what's going on is that in my mind, I was trying to rewrite a story that I wrote when I was in high school, which falls more into the YA genre.
Right.
And I was teaching middle grade. And so my expertise wasn't really with the high school students. It was with middle grade at this point. And so I think that was definitely something that really, that I didn't realize until I started writing in middle grade. So I started writing. I wrote about, I think I have 3 or 4 YA books that I've written. I didn't have too much luck with them. My agent and I, we decided that we're going to go take a pause. We're going to stop submitting anymore because we're pretty much running out of people to submit to.
Wow.
It happens. It does happen. Right. It's a good call sometimes. Especially when, as a writer, if you keep getting the same kind of feedback and you're hearing the same thing over and over again, that's a time to really take a moment to reflect on your work.
Right.
And so I did. I took a break from writing. And and then I decided to write a book pretty much just for myself and for my kids. I had given up already. I fortunately didn't tell my agent that. None of this would have happened. But 6 months later, I finished the middle grade book.
Wow.
And I just kind of recorded what was around me. And because I've been teaching now for this is going to be my 25th year.
Wow.
Yeah, my expertise is, I mean, I'm pretty much locked in a room with middle grade kids all day long, so that's pretty much my expertise. And I never thought of it that way. And so my teaching world and my writing world kind of collided, and Ephraim Divided was born.
Wow. Well, I'm really glad that your students pushed you, so thanks to your students, whoever they are, wherever they are, But now, so now I got to ask a few questions on things that you said so far. So you're saying you're someone who used to daydream a lot. Were you also a big reader, or was just you just had a very vivid, like, active imagination? You were always creating different scenarios in your head.
When I was in elementary, reading was never really pushed on me.
Uh-huh.
The only books that I would love, I remember there was a Riff, I believe it was called Riff, and they would actually give you a free book.
Huh.
And I remember going there and watching reading the books and reading them over and over again. There was, from an early age, I remember, I think it was a Cookie Monster. There was one with a Cookie Monster and a witch.
What?
And a tree. I don't remember what it was called, but it was like my favorite book.
Oh, I know that book. I know that book. I don't remember what it's called either, but I do know that book.
Where the tree will only give cookies if you share them?
Yes. Yes, yeah, I know the book. I do. As you started saying it, like, the images started coming into my mind. I'm going to have to look it up afterwards. We're going to have to find out what that book is. Yeah.
But I loved everything about that one, especially the ending, and I won't spoil it in case anybody wants to read it,
right,
or finds it. But strangely enough, when I reflect back on whether, because people have asked me that question before, when I was in elementary, because I was Latino, I was put in the bilingual program.
Okay.
And, it wasn't a bilingual program. Let me take that back. It was more of a EL program. And we didn't get everything. The higher classes had the computers in the classroom. I remember the two Apple computers that were in the room. I remember earlier on, they're the ones that had the wood kitchen to play with. And they were allowed to draw. And I remember just kind of peeking over and wondering, how come I don't get to draw? Huh. How come I don't get to play these things?
Right.
And what is that computer thing? I would love to learn a little bit more about that.
Right.
And so my teacher, I believe by fifth grade, I wasn't taken to the library anymore. And I loved reading. I really did. But I stopped reading.
Oh, wow.
I just wasn't, given the opportunity anymore. And then I went to a small school, a middle school that had a very tiny library. And by then, life had a lot of distractions for me. And I didn't read again. And I'm a little embarrassed to say this, but I didn't pick up a book until, from fourth grade. I don't think I read another book until my junior year in high school.
Oh, that's a long time.
It is. And considering the fact that I did book reports and presentations on books I never read, it's kind of sad and scary too.
Well, so you were in an American school and you spoke Spanish at home? Just to make sure that that's clear.
No. My parents only spoke Spanish to me, but they were always gone because they had to go to work.
Okay.
So my mom wouldn't return. I wouldn't see her until about 8 o'clock.
Wow.
In the evening. Mm. So she'd come home, feed me, and that was pretty much it. So I knew Spanish. I didn't practice it very much.
Right.
My siblings, my older sisters, just spoke English to me.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. It's a tough question to answer right. Correctly.
But you were able
I'm
to...
Sure thing. I'm not sure which language is my first.
yeah, that's funny. First. Yeah. Because you do have a slight accent, but it's funny, maybe because if that's the way you heard English spoken, though, but... When you're talking about that, you weren't taken. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah?
Oh, no. I was thinking, that's a good point. We in high school, we had a teacher that had a, I don't remember where he was from, but he had a very distinct accent. And all the kids that took Spanish from him, they developed the same accent that he did.
Oh, that's funny.
And so growing up, the English that I was hearing was from people who did not have the best English.
Right.
So, yeah. You're correct about that.
Well, that's like, this is a total side point, but for example, when I was in Europe and you heard people from other countries, like either from France or Germany or wherever it was, and they were speaking English and they're speaking English with a British accent, it threw me at first. So I'm like, why are they speaking English like that? Like only British people speak with an English accent. It's like, well, who do you think they're learning English from? They're learning British English. They're not learning American English. So that's, it depends on who you're learning it from, and that's how you're going to speak it, I guess. But
yes, exactly.
But if you're then, you're learning in English and all these things, the teacher not taking you to the library, it seems like you would have been fluent enough in English to still be able to be reading whatever language books they have there. So are they just not taking you because that program, whatever program you were stuck in, they weren't taking anymore? Or were there other things going on? Maybe the teacher
It also goes back to, it really goes back to not seeing myself in the books, too.
Okay.
I lost total interest in reading.
Okay.
I mean, I was reading stories that just I wasn't connecting to. And right. I had bigger issues in my life then. And so when you hear a character and, you know, you read a book about two kids and it's a friendship story and it's about somebody gossiping or something.
Right.
In my mind, I'm thinking, I really could not care any less about this.
Right.
Because I have bigger issues at home and, you know, that I'm experiencing and just in my neighborhood alone.
Right.
I was experiencing, there was a lot of violence around me. And I got to see things that I shouldn't have seen at that age.
Wow.
And so when you go home and somebody's keep telling you, oh, read this book and it's about something that's very trivial, it just didn't make any sense to me. Why would I read that?
Right. Like, I wish that was my problem. Like, it's not. Right. Wow. So when you first starting, when you were first writing your YA books, were those also reflective, or stories, were those also reflective of the area that you were growing up in, or your middle grade was a total change, both in genre and in your audience?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Some of the stories that I wrote, I have one that I'm going to go back and I'm going to rewrite actually very soon.
Oh, yay.
it's called The Writing on the Wall. And that's the one I referred to earlier that I actually wrote when I was a senior in high school.
Right.
As a short story. And that one's, yeah, that's the story that's really been calling to me for a long, long time. But I also read other things. I've done a little bit of science fiction. I like to experiment with all genres, really. I mean, things that I've never done before, I like to just kind of challenge myself to.
Yeah, that's great. Are you also, when you're reading, do you also read across genres, or you're sticking to one or two kind of genres when you're reading? Well, assuming you read more now, yeah.
Oh, well, that's the thing. When I went back, I became an English major, so I had to.
Oh, wow.
And so what I've been doing for the last probably 15, 20 years is I've been trying to catch up to everybody else.
Yeah.
So, yes, I have a master's degree in creative writing, so I've definitely put in the time to, to make up for lost time.
So that's reading across the board, whatever you get your hands on sort of thing.
I do, but I'm also very selective with what I read now. As an author, I don't really have the luxury to read for fun as much anymore.
Yeah, it's so true.
Very seldomly will I be able to.
Yeah.
And so if I pick up a book and I find that I lose interest, I stop. I've stopped like short of like one or two chapters before I finish the book, only because I feel like I don't want to see, if there's something I don't want to incorporate into my own writing, I don't want to pick up bad habits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, yes, if I read a book, no matter, even if it's an award-winning book, if it's not something I'd be proud to write, I don't want to read it.
Oh, wow. Wow. Very discriminating taste.
Harsh, but,
yeah.
But when you don't have time to read as much as I would like to, you kind of, and you subconsciously, you do learn every time you read a book.
Yeah, for sure.
You pick up something.
Yeah, yeah. Right, which is also why you do have to read to just, because if there's good things to pick up, you want to pick it up by reading. So,
yeah, I guess
that works both ways. So that's so also just going back for a second. So you said that you didn't, were you not encouraged to be writing more, or you just discouraged yourself out of writing in high school? Like, how do you go from, you wrote a short story as a senior and then you thought you were never going to write again, but then you still ended up with a major in English. So how does that work?
Yeah, that's kind of a strange story. So I was sitting in the middle of class. One day, and the students are working on my classes. They're working on this thing called the Renaissance Project.
Okay.
And so you're supposed to showcase your talents and kind of, and do a project that encompasses a little bit about the era and something of your interest.
Right.
So we had students that were making models of the solar system. We had other people who were performing, who were the theater kids, and everybody had something going on. And for the life of me, I didn't know what kind of project to select.
Right.
Anyways, my teacher, pretty much in front of the whole class, called me out, and she used very colorful language, and said that I wasn't stupid. I was just effing lazy.
Oh boy.
But that was the best thing anybody had ever done for me.
Oh, wow.
Because it showed that she actually cared. She used to have a couch in the classroom. And any time that that somebody was having issues, she would stop class and she'd, you know, get to work, and she would go talk to the person. And so when I realized that she actually cared about us, and she, and I started trying to write, kind of to please her. And so it's the first time that I ever put out any effort in the class. And I went from an F to an A in the class.
Wow.
And it, I started liking the class so much that one day she brought in, for example, let me see how much I liked the class. There was a couple of times where I would ditch my next class just so I could go back to her class twice. She never noticed. I would just kind of, you know, be, go to the back, and I would just participate all over again. And then one day she had an author by the name of María Elena Villamontes. She wrote The Moth. And there's a scene in there, and she was a Latino author. I had never read a Latino book before.
Oh.
And she's describing her her grandmother and giving her a bath. And I just, I saw my own grandmother there, and the language and the world. And this was a professional author, and I had never seen something like this. And it was the first time that I reconnected with a book. And it just, there was something about it. And then I remember going over there, and she signed my book. She actually gave us copies of her book, which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And she asked me, you know, are you going to be going to school? And I'm like, well, I got accepted into UCI, which is another long story how that happened.
Right.
She asked me, what's your major? And without really knowing why, I had never really given it too much thought, I said English.
Huh.
But that's what I wanted to study.
Right.
And that's when, so I eventually changed my major to into English, and that's what I did. And it was just because of that one story.
Wow. That's fantastic. It's so, there's so little, like all these little things that are planted throughout your life that lead you to the point where you are now.
Yes. And everything's really weird because, like, I was in an honors class, but yet I had really horrific grades, but my test scores were really high.
Oh.
And so, because they were high, they put me in the honors class.
Right.
It's a long story, but they called, the kids called me a filler. I was just there so they wouldn't close the class.
Oh, man.
Because of the numbers. And so I got kind of upset. I didn't like being called a filler.
Yeah.
So I decided to, you know, hurt them where I hurt the most, and their pride. And I ended up with an A in the class. And when I got an A in this honors class, my counselor calls me in and says, we're going to put you in all honors.
Oh. Well, there, you did it to yourself.
That's how I ended up going to college, because it bumped my GPA.
Wow.
And when you're surrounded with kids who say, hey, after school, let's get together and do homework, it's a lot different from my other friends who wanted to go out and play basketball.
Yes. Yes, it
and
does.
So that
yeah.
positive peer pressure, it really changed my life.
Well, the kids who were in the kids who were, hey, let's go do homework afterwards, they're still, like, kids from your neighborhood, sort of, some of them like you, some of them not like you, or were these also different kinds of kids that were going to do that?
It was just a different personality type.
Right, okay.
I got taken away from my regular friends, and I was put in the cohort with the gate kids.
Uh-huh.
And you know, they're not any smarter. They really aren't. It's just that they've been raised differently, and they have that, they're self-motivated. And I think that's really much the only difference between an honors kid and a regular kid. Everybody's gate, everybody has a talent. It's just we do different things differently.
That's so true. Well, that's also, yeah.
I was just going to say, there's gate high school kids who I wouldn't trust to cross the street.
Right, right.
So, yeah.
Right. That's like, you could have someone who's very academically smart and is not good with people, or you could have someone who's not necessarily academically smart, but they're great with people. Like, so who's the smarter kid? Well, none of them. Like, what skill do you need right now? And that's all I'll decide who I need right now, kind of thing. Not because
exactly.
Everyone's better than someone else. Yeah. Wow. So now, when you're writing now, so going back to, first of all, as you're writing, you're sending out your YA books, and a lot of them were not getting accepted. From other writers that you know that are also represented, do you see that this is like a similar thing that happens, that just because you wrote a book and you have an agent doesn't mean your first your first novel is going to sell and sell big? Do you find that a lot of writers often have to try again and again and with different manuscripts? Just from your experience.
That seems to be the norm. Most of my friends are authors. Most of them, a lot of them, this is like their seventh or eighth book that they've written.
Well,
and it's because it's an entire process. The whole writing is, you have to learn, there's a lot of writing, a lot of learning to be done.
Yes.
And so when you're first starting off, it's very difficult to know exactly what you're doing, to find your voice. And a lot of times we're listening to so many different people.
Yeah.
I know for my work, for example, I always say it has a little bit of a Frankenstein syndrome to it.
Okay.
Because, you know, I read a book and I was thinking, oh my goodness, this author is amazing. I'm going to try and do this. And then an editor will give me some feedback. Okay, I'll try that. Another editor will tell me to do something else. Okay, let me add this.
Huh.
And when you're done, it's not even your book anymore.
Right.
It's everybody else's book.
Right. Right.
And that's never going to work. I don't believe that's going to be, I don't think that can be successful.
Right. Well, yeah, I've also had that. If I look at my first book, when I look at what my first book is and what I'm writing now, and you know, the 5, 6, 7 years that have passed since then. So I still love the story of my first book, but I know that my writing has gotten 7 years better. And I almost think like, wow, I can't believe the first book ever got published, because I'm 7 years better is so much better than 7 years before, no matter how much I love the story. So I guess that's also an element that you just have to keep. You have to realize just because the book is your like life right now, it doesn't mean it's, there's other books in you also, hopefully, and those books, you can get them better, and you can return to the first one, or I don't know.
Yes, and you want to hear the irony of my situation?
Yes.
Is that I modified my writing style for years, and I would go to the bookstores, I would buy the books that I would sit there for hours going through the books, I'd find a few that, okay, this is the kind of author I want to be, and then I would take the books and I would deconstruct them. And just take them apart and, okay, so this chapter made me feel this way. How is it that I'm feeling this way? What did the author do? And I would, dissect the language and the style and everything going on there, all the nuances. And at the end of the day, when I wrote this F and Divided, I forgot about that because I was, like I mentioned earlier, I had pretty much given up already.
Right.
And so I didn't care what anybody thought or what I should be doing anymore. And I just wrote it the way that I used to write. So F and Divided is actually just my voice from when I first started writing.
Well, so you had to free yourself.
I'm not saying that all those years were a waste, because they're not. Because subconsciously, I learned a lot of mechanics and a lot of little tricks to be able to write what I wanted to say. But what was successful for me was keeping true to my own writing.
Right.
And not trying to write like anybody else. And I think that just stems from confidence and from seeing value in your own voice. And I never really had that before.
Right.
And so when I took that off, the element off the table, it allowed Efren to just come out the way it should have come out.
Right. Well, that's also interesting because from what I've seen, it's been really well received. So it's not just, I came out with a debut, but that people are really responding positively. It means that you probably got something right, you know.
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks ago, I received an email that Amazon, the editors at Amazon, has selected it one of the like top 12 middle grade books of 2020.
Woohoo! Congratulations!
Yes, it was. And then there was talk about the Newbery, the JBL. My book was being mentioned on that list, and it's very surreal. I mean, Project Lit picked it up, and I've been getting, every day, I spend a couple hours entering emails from teachers and librarians and readers, and, I've gotten a request from, was it France or Italy? Somebody wanted a copy of the book overseas.
Wow.
So it's been amazing. I mean, it's nothing I ever imagined. I mean, I wrote a quiet little story, and my plans were just to Xerox it and share it with my students and my kids at home.
Wow.
So I have no idea exactly what happened.
It's, I guess, God's bringing everything together at the right time, or whatever you believe in. That's great, though. That's fantastic. I think that almost needs. Well, do you feel now that, oh man, my next book better measure up? Or now you're like, hey, now I feel like I know a little bit more of who I am and what I'm doing. I'm just going to keep writing, and whatever's going to make it is going to be great. If it doesn't make it, I'll just keep trying. Like, what kind of how's that? Is that affecting your mind right now? Or you're just like, savor this moment and then move on?
No, definitely. And I keep going back and forth on that. My second book is a little bit lighter. It has a lot of humor in it.
That's good. Yeah.
I just felt like I have a nephew who started reading my book, and he put it down and said, "I'm sorry, Uncle, I can't finish this."
Oh, wow.
Because he knew that it was based on my mom, his grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "I just can't stand to see this happening to my family."
Wow.
So, you know, and now he, since then he got a little older. Now he's read it and he loves it. But so I wanted to write something that was a little easier to read. But still, it has the same kind of heart as *Effort Divided*. But yes, I do worry about that. I feel like there's no way that I can. I mean, this is like a perfect storm almost, and there's no way it can repeat itself.
Right.
And the expectations. A lot of people have always said your sophomore book should always be, you know, better than the first.
Oh, geez, yeah.
But I just don't see how I can top *Effort Divided*. That was just such a personal book. It's about my family and my community. You know, issues that I feel very passionate about. That's definitely there.
Well, maybe if it's a YA, that will free you a little bit from it. But then again, I don't know, maybe you just need to get it ready to your second and third and fourth book already, so that way you can have the remove of, you know, you have your shining star there, and then you put up your other stars as you go along.
I would definitely recommend that for people. My experiences, a lot of authors have pretty much shared something similar to this, is that it's a lot of pressure.
Right.
And when you're writing, when you don't have an agent, you're not represented, and you don't have a contract, you are free to write what you want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very liberating.
Yes.
When you're writing under contract, like I am for the second, or I was for the second book, it's not as much fun.
Huh.
It's a lot of pressure, and you're writing, and it's almost like you're writing because you have to, you're obligated to, not because you have that desire to share the story or to write this book. It's a little different.
Yeah, it's interesting, because on the one hand, you get a wider market, or you could get hopefully more money for it and all these things, but at the same time, you have to follow the rules, certain kinds of rules now in order to get that. That's interesting.
Yes, and depending on your contract, you might have to write something similar to the first one. I have a lot of friends that were asked to write sequels to the first book.
Right.
And I do have plans to write a sequel to *Efren*, but just not now.
Yeah.
Because time needs to pass.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I always tell people that they ask me about the ending to *Efren Divided*, and it's kind of up to the world to see how *Efren's* story continues.
Oh, wow.
If we can make gains in the way we treat immigrants in this world, then Efren's going to go one way. And if we don't, then Efren's going to be written a different way.
Uh-oh.
So it's up to the world to see what happens, you know, how the story really ends. But yeah, you know, sometimes people are asked to write part twos when they don't really want to. Fortunately, I'm really blessed. I have, like, the best editors and just the support system that I have. It's amazing.
That's fantastic. When you send your agent the manuscript for *Effort Divided*, was your agent like, "This is it, we finally got it," or was like, "Okay, I love it, but let's see how it goes"? Or was there that moment of, "We got it"?
I had pretty much given up, so I never intended to give it to her.
Right.
My daughter at the time, was this 2016, read the book and told me that it was the best book she'd ever written.
Well,
and I thought, well, yeah, you're my child.
Yeah.
But this is a little child that would just pretty much put X's on all my work and go, "No, Dad." To par.
Oh, she's tough.
Which I loved. And so I started thinking about that. And I think it's because she was able to see herself in the story.
Right.
And I don't think she'd ever really seen that before.
Right.
And so I called my agent. I said, "Well, you know what? I didn't tell you about this one, but I don't know. I wrote it. It's done. My kids love it. Would you take a look at it?" And then, like a week later, I received an email saying, "Yep, I'm going to start pitching it." And then, and we've been at this for forever. And 2 weeks later, we had an offer from HarperCollins, who are the second largest publisher in the world.
Wow.
It's just insane.
Wow. So you went from years to 2 weeks, basically. Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing. That's absolutely fantastic.
It's like one of those, what's that term that people are using? You know, like overnight sensations. But it took, after 14 years of trying.
Wow. 14 years? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for 14 years I've been writing, and nothing had happened. And the only reason I didn't give up was because my students kept asking me about how's your writing going. And you can't look a kid in the eye and say, oh, no, I gave up because it was too hard.
Right.
It wasn't happening.
Right. That's right. Because then how are you going to tell them anything after that? They're going to say, you're not persevering. Why should I?
Mm-hmm. And so I just kept writing just for almost, I mean, I before the rejection used to hurt. After a while, I stopped hearing no. And I started just hearing not yet.
Oh, that's very good.
And that was my approach to it.
Wow.
And even now, when people just criticize the work, it's fine. It's like, I just take it in, and I'm like, okay, let me see what I can, how I can modify it.
Right. Well, because someone doesn't like a story, it could just mean that they're not connecting to it just because they don't. Like, it's so subjective. And then, that doesn't mean you're not a good writer. It's nobody's business to tell if you're a good writer or not. Just if I connect it to your story or not, I guess. Well, that's my thought.
That's the biggest criticism right there. That's what I was always told. We're not connecting to your characters.
Well, I guess because this one's so personal, yeah.
And yet, this book is being praised for, the connection that people are making to it, which is just really weird. It's like, I didn't change anything.
Yeah.
What happened here?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe just people just have to get to the right place for it. Yeah, who knows? Well, so here's, we're gonna start wrapping it up. Just, I have two questions. So one, and just let me know if I'm not phrasing this correctly, or just because I don't want to not say this correctly. So when you're talking about how you weren't seeing yourself in certain stories, right? So is that specifically just because, not necessarily because, there's bigger things going on at home or whatever, or is that actually because, I'm growing up in a Latino household and all these characters are not Latino, so I'm not connecting to them because we're so culturally different. Like, is it more just because this just seems so petty? So even if it would have been a non-Latino, but if it would have been a more important issue, who knows, maybe you could have connected to that. Does that make sense?
Yes, and the answer would be both.
Okay, okay.
I needed to see some books with Latinos out there because
right.
I needed to... again, I grew up with a sense of disentitlement because I didn't think I could do these things.
Okay.
I thought that's for those other kids mm-hmm. To do, not for me, the ones that were in the honors classes, which I was able to hold my own against. So that kind of worked out. But
right.
But it wasn't just the Latino thing. I was never top of my class. I was not that kid who always raised his hand. I was kind of like the opposite of that kid growing up. And when you see writers and authors, and I've only had one author give me a different answer. Everybody else that I've asked, and I've asked every author I meet this, did you know that you could someday publish a book? And with only one exception, everybody said yes. And when I ask them about, you ask them questions about how they grew up, they were lifelong readers. They've been writing since they were little. They were editors for the high school newspaper. They were always those kids, the top 2% of their class. And that's the voices that we're hearing. And so when I pick up a book, that's not my world that I know. That's a wholly different world. And how do you find people who aren't part of that 2% to write books and for people to value them? And so there aren't that many authors with that kind of background. So you look at people like Jason Reynolds, who also was a late reader.
Yeah.
I think he didn't read until very late, too, like I did.
Right.
And so the perspective is different.
Uh-huh.
And those are the perspectives that I connect to.
Okay. Well, because something that I've always wondered about that is... I mean, I'm public. I never thought I was going to be I never thought I was going to be a writer. I was never the good writer in my class, even though I was always a big reader. But something that I always wonder about is, especially now when you have such a big drive to get more diverse voices, which is, I think great. Get anybody who wants to write a book, get them up there. The more books there are, and the better they are, the better it is for the whole writing world. Just give everyone a fair chance. Give any color, everything. Just give them all the chance. But So part of me always wonders about, sure, on the one hand, you want someone to see themselves physically, but don't we also want to encourage people to see themselves emotionally in someone else, whether or not they're physically the same, because that's a different kind of connection. And it almost brings about like a different kind of, I don't know if this is the right word, but like unity in saying, hey, physically we look different, but emotionally we have so much in common. I'm not saying emotionally, inside we have so much in common. Let's not let our physical differences divide us. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, it's being about the window books and giving other opportunity, an opportunity to see how other people live.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, right now, but I'm rereading Refugee, and that's a story from, you know, it's a story set in Germany. One of them is set in Cuba, and the other one, I believe, is Syria. And so those are perspectives, and learning about the customs and the religions and everything else is fascinating to me. And when you read about other stories, I think what I find is that we're very much alike. And so
yes.
I can relate. I remember reading Kelly Yang's Front Desk and just thinking, oh my goodness, this is an Asian family. However, if you were to switch my parents with her parents,
right,
they would fit in perfectly.
That's funny.
It's almost the same family.
That's really funny. Well, because if you have values, you know, if you have a strong sense of family, if you're someone that grew up, you know, multi-generations in your home or whatever it is, it doesn't matter where you're from. It's like, that's what your life revolves around, not my hope.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so it doesn't really matter. It's more like the theme. So it doesn't matter to me. I can relate to any story. I love, in fact, most of the books I read right now aren't Latino books. And again, it's just, I mean, I do like to have a variety with what I read. I just like,
yeah.
I like very honest books. I think that's the first thing I want. I want some honesty. I like books that read like if you were reading somebody's journal.
Oh, well, okay. Right.
That's just my personal choice.
Right.
But I love books that really connect with you, that are very honest. And I think the more honest the not there is, the closer that you build like that relationship with the reader.
Right. So, okay, it sounds like that is kind of the answer, is that we need both kinds of books. We need books that you can identify physically with, and books that you could identify, I guess, internally with. I don't know if that's the right word, but... So, yeah, that's what we should have then. We'll make that happen.
Definitely.
Yeah. Between all of us, we can make it happen.
Mirror books.
Huh?
Both. Huh? Mirror books, where you can see yourself, and window books, where you can look into other people's lives.
Yeah. Right. Well, yes. And that's also... Well, because that's also part of it... they say so much like, oh, how much of you is put into a book? So much of it is also, well, it's not, this may or may not be me, like this character, but this character is going to have my perceptions, or this character is going to have, because even if I'm like, okay, I have to make the character more evil or something, it's my perception of what's more evil or my perception of what's more good that's going to be affecting this character. So if I can really put myself into these books, and hopefully I'm not writing things that are frivolous, but things that really show a human perspective and things that can really connect. Because if someone else could connect to that, it's I don't know. There's so much going on now with all the physical divides, and it's just, sometimes I get a little frustrated with it. But it's good to know that, you know, if we're aiming for both, then I think we'll be on the right track for that. I don't know if that, I just went on a total loop there. I don't know if any of that made sense.
No, I get you. And we definitely need to have a need for both. And there's room for both.
Right. Well, yeah, because, again, as long as it's going to be a good book, like, good books will get readers. That's what I think, at least. That's what I hope. Especially with so much TV out there. I really hope that. Okay, I think I warned you this when I first spoke to you about it, but I didn't warn you recently. But I always wrap up with asking, so we'll see if you could come up with an answer for this. I always want ask guests on to if they would fill in the blank of, I love it when either authors, publishers, whatever it is, do X, and I really don't like it when they do X. Can you fill in the blank for either of those?
Mm-hmm. I love when publishers publish books that they don't necessarily would connect to, or maybe even read themselves. And I hate when publishers assume that some books cannot be commercially successful just because because they might, because of the subject matter or because of the they're considered to be small stories, or sometimes because they're from authors of color. So that's not, I wasn't too precise on that one. Does that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, so it sounds like, I love it when publishers give books a chance, almost, that just because it's not going to be, just because it doesn't fit a formula doesn't mean it shouldn't be, right? Is that what you're saying? That,
well, too many times publishers, and they have so many funds that they spend every year that they allocate to books.
Right.
And it's something like 80% goes to like a few select books, and then everybody else has to share the 20%.
Oh, well,
so they
okay.
pretty much determine who gets to hit the New York Times bestselling list ahead of time.
Right.
And so that's a lot of power, and I really think that's a decision that should be left in the buyer's hands and not the publisher's hands.
That is that's a very good point. Because if you could put a massive marketing campaign behind something, then more people will know about it, so more people will buy it.
And that's why we have a lot of New York Times bestselling books that aren't really that great. And then we have other books that are just amazing. I have so many friends that have amazing, amazing books, and their books aren't being supported. And so nobody ever hears about them, and they kind of disappear. Sadly, they go unread.
Yeah. Well, that's... Ernesto, you've given us so much to think about. I'm really glad we were able to get you, and I'm really glad you were able to come on. And I thank you so much for your time and for sharing with us.
Oh, thank you for thinking of me, and I really enjoyed this. It was very enjoyable. Thank you.
Yay, awesome. Very good. Oh My Word podcast is brought to you by the basement dwellers of Oh My Word. For more information, follow us on Instagram, Oh My Word Podcast, or go online, eltenbaum.com. Today's guest author was Ernesto Cisneros. Music is by Tim Burke. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.